There are so many reasons why I got into teaching.
One of the best things is the light bulb moment.
When you see a pupil suddenly understand something, that's really, really special.
Every child is so full of potential, and the thing that makes me proudest to be a teacher is seeing them realise what they are capable of.
I don't think any other job can give you the same satisfaction.
That's why I chose to teach.
You could get £26,000 tax-free to train. Search, apply to teach. Selected subjects only, subject to eligibility.
For the first time in 13 years, the co-hosts of Gamertag Radio are going to have the first live recording in front of an audience during PodFest 2018. This live recording event is free to attend February 9th, 2018 from 6 to 7 p.m. It's going to take place at PodFest Multimedia Expo 2018 in Orlando, Florida. See Paris, Pete, and Danny live at PodFest 2018. For more information, head over to GamertagRadio.com or PodFest.us.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Ladies and gentlemen. Podcasting since 2005.
Take it out.
You're listening to Gamertag Radio.
Back on the scene.
With your host, podcaster Hall of Famer Danny Pena, the always opinionated Paris Lilly, and from outside of the norm, Peter Toledo. This is Gamertag Radio.
Here we go.
Welcome to Gamertag Radio, episode 730. This is your host, Danny, and joining me this week, the crew, the whole Gamertag Radio crew, we have Paris in the house. What's up, Paris?
Hey, good morning, everyone. How you doing?
Good, man. What's up with you, man? How was the weekend? Still, I see you playing The Division 1.8.
I love how he just put spoilers out there for what we're going to talk about on the show. Yes, I've been playing The Division. I'll say this, though, but I'll do it after the intros. I kind of want to talk about something with Destiny 2, which, oh, shocker, right? But I want to bring up something on that with the community right now.
All right, cool. And also joining us, Pete. What's up, Pete?
What's up, man? How's everybody doing? Apologize, my voice sounds like crap right now. I'm going to admit it. I overslept, and I'm still trying to get the cold out my eyes and everything, dude. So, well, other than that, had a good chance to go hang out with you yesterday, Danny. That's always cool. Fun. Even though short-lived, you know, it was just like, what, 30 minutes or something like that. It was fun.
Yeah.
And it was good to catch up. It was good for the girls. It was good for, you know, our females in our lives to hang out. It's been, what, a year or something like that since we've all hung out, you know, since they actually have had a chance to hang out together?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think since the screening
yeah.
that we had.
Yeah.
That's cool. We got to do more of that, man.
Absolutely.
That's a lot of fun.
Absolutely.
Definitely. All right, head over to GamertagRadio.com. Listen to our past episodes. Make sure to post your comments, share the content. You can find us also on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, TuneIn Radio, Stitcher, and other podcast directories.
Send us your feedback or questions.
Yep.
Give us a call at 786-273-7GTR. Email us at fanmail@gamertagradio.com or leave a message on speakpipe.com/gamertagradio.
Remember, in a couple weeks, we're going to be in Orlando. We're going to have a live show there. I'm trying to work something out to see if we could also stream this. It's not 100%, but I'm still working on it. I'll keep you posted once that is confirmed and everything. But yeah, if you're in Orlando, you would like to watch it live, it's totally free. Just hit me up, Godfrey@GamertagRadio.com. Gamertag Radio crew, we're going to be there. You know, Pete and Paris are going to be joining me too. That's going to be a lot of fun, and it's the first time in 13 years that we're going to record live. I've never done this. Paris, I've never done this. Pete, either. So this is going to be very, very interesting to see what's going to happen. So, yeah, join us. And also, next month, February 25th at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, we're going to premiere the documentary of Gamertag Radio on Twitch. You can watch it live. And once that happens, hopefully the next day or so, we're also going to have it available on YouTube. So you could also watch it there, man. It's totally free, too. So it's a great way for us to celebrate our 13th anniversary, man. So any questions, make sure to hit us up at fam.gamertagradio.com or hit us up on Twitter, Facebook, and other places, man. Or join our Discord channel, too, man. So that's cool. All right. So I know we have fan mail, but Paris, you want to mention anything before we go forward and read these questions?
Yeah. So again, still January. There's not a super ton of content to go over right now. So just bringing this up, kind of piggybacking on some stuff we're talking about last week. With Destiny 2, I'll try and keep it short and sweet. But, I mean, I found this very interesting because it's twofold. Bungie, again, with their faction rallies, came out for Destiny 2, another debacle because they didn't properly communicate with the community. So there was a lot of confusion and they just more upset people in the community about what they did with faction rallies this week. Right. And I'm not trying to harp too much on the hate Destiny train. I mean, it's all well documented, the issues that they've had. My personal standpoint is, take a break right now, come back later in the year when they get everything fixed. That's kind of how I'm looking at it and taking it from a personal standpoint. But the reason I'm bringing this up is the community built around it, the quote unquote streamer and YouTube community that's built around Destiny that has been for the past 3 years. And I noticed something this week. I saw something on Reddit that Gathalion, King Gathalion, he's very popular streamer in the Destiny community. You could even argue he's the number one Destiny streamer on Twitch in the community. And he's co-founder along with Professor Broman of GuardianCon. He has unbranded his channel from Destiny. As it stands right now, new subs would get Destiny themed, like ghost emotes, things of that nature. Everything was built around Destiny. He has unbranded his channel from Destiny now. And I find that fascinating in a way because it goes to show you that you can't build one thing or you can't build your entire brand around one IP. And to piggyback on that, Datto, who's a popular YouTuber, which, again, he's in that top 5% of people in the Destiny community that does content around Destiny. I watched a video from him yesterday and he was just flummoxed. He doesn't know what to do because he's literally built his entire following around Destiny. And he's even realized that when he's dipped his toe into doing other games, people simply don't tune into him for that because he's not the expert on that. And he never has been. And he realizes that this late stage, if he were to unbrand his channel from Destiny and attempt to go do something else, his numbers are going to plummet. I mean, he was just completely open about this on the video. And if you watch it and he gets towards the end, he's just defeated. He doesn't know what to do. And like I was saying before, and there's other examples of this. I know Triple Rec had a great video, a couple other people as well, where a lot of these streamers and YouTube personalities are moving on to other things already. I mean, Destiny 2 hasn't even been out 6 months yet. And this is where we are right now with that IP. And like I was saying before, you can't build everything around one brand, one IP, your entire brand, because if that IP tanks, now what? What are you going to do? And that's kind of what we're seeing right now. You don't own the IP. You can't shape what Bungie does as a company to fix the game or the speed in which they will fix the game. And as it stands right now, realistically, Destiny 2 is not going to truly be in a good place probably until this fall. That's just simply way too long for most people. The casual audience, which is why they made all these changes, they're gone. They're not coming back. The hardcore people like myself and others out there in the community will come back. But we're the minority when it comes to that. So the numbers are going to take a hit for that community and for that IP. And what they do beyond this, I just don't know. It's going to be fascinating to see in 2018 what they can do. I mean, you know, some of their leadership at Bungie, they've been very vocal on Twitter. They've been talking to people about the changes and everything they want to do. But every time they take two steps forward, you have something like faction rallies, which knocks them three steps back. And it just pisses people off even more. So it's fascinating. You guys know how much I love the game. I mean, it's very open how much I love the game and how much I've played it over the past 3+ years. And here we are. I don't play it right now. I don't have motivation to go play it right now. And I mean, we're just simply in a wait and see mode. But I find it fascinating that people, that streamers and the YouTubers that have literally built careers around this game, where they are right now and what they're going to do. So I know it's pretty long winded, but I just kind of wanted to throw that out there and curious what Danny and Pete think about it.
Yeah, and we had this conversation, Paris. Like, this reminds me a lot when I was doing the same exact thing with Fantasy Star Online. Just had a whole show just on that game. And people, like, in my opinion, people move on, man. And it's hard for a content creator just to focus on one game, because you're depending on that, on the developers, man. Because if they screw up, that's it. Your whole brand is done. Mm-hmm. So that's the situation that's going on with them, the content creators for Destiny. And it's just hard, man. It's difficult. Like, the thing is, a lot of the people that tune in, subscribe, watch them play these games on Twitch or YouTube and so on, they move on. If there's things that they don't like in the game, they're going to move on and play other things, man. And I don't know, as a content creator, I just find that so difficult, man, because you're like in a tough spot. You don't know what to do. You don't know what to do, where to go. And you can send that feedback to Bungie, but like you said, it's not going to get fixed until like later this year, probably. Maybe fall. And that's a maybe, because who knows? Maybe that is also going to be messed up.
Yeah, we don't know. We simply don't know.
Yeah, it's just a tough situation, man.
It is. What about you, Pete? I'm very curious on your thoughts, because obviously, you know, we helped co-found, you know, Destiny Wife Problems, and you bailed before I did.
Right.
Very early on in Destiny 2's life. And, you know, again, here we are. So I'm just curious what you think.
We're all in agreement with regards to building your brand around one specific title. I think the only one that you could possibly do would be World of Warcraft, maybe League of Legends. Those are, you know, longstanding games that I think at this point would have to have a complete failure of the organization itself. Like Riot would have to shut down for that organization to tank. So I think it's very, very difficult, and I don't want to downplay people's business decisions. So I kind of want to stay away from that part of the conversation. It's unfortunate because the game itself has so much potential. We saw everything that's gone on over the last 3 years with Division, with Destiny, to see what could have been. And to see that it's had its stumbling blocks. And I guess it's good for it to have it now before it gets any further in its infancy. Because at the end of the day, if you look at it, 3 years into gaming for an IP is still relatively young. Especially when you compare it to the League of Legends and World of Warcraft and games like that. Games that have a much longer lifespan and sample size for success. I'd like to see, obviously, we want to see it do better, because nobody does well when you have failures. But as we've all talked about it, I've said this countless times, it's now up to Bungie to now sit down, have its heart-to-heart moment, and determine, okay, what do we need to do to fix this, and use this as a learning experience. You know, I had a slip of the tongue, and I said Division. That's a perfect example. I mean, it had a phenomenal launch, one of the best launches of all time in Ubisoft's history, just 2 years ago. And then after, I want to say, 4 to 6 months, it had a sharp decline. Nobody was playing the game. You know, like, it went through so many iterations of, you know, tweaking and then break fix and then tweaking and break fix. You know, it went from, you know, the 1.2 update all the way up to the 1.7 update. Literally a year and a half of them just trying to get it right. And it wasn't until just, you know, a couple of weeks ago when the 1.8 update came out. Now everybody's talking about it. I mean, our Discord has exploded as a result. You've got, you know, content creators and stuff like on Twitch, like Summit 1G and things like that. They're all going back to the Division, you know, it shows the dynamic skill set of these higher level, higher tier content creators like the Summit 1Gs and Sacreals and Shrouds, where they're not reliant on a single title. They can dynamically move and shift from one game to another, whether it's PUBG, and then now it's Escape from Tarkov, and now it's this new Battlefield game or Battlefront game or whatever. It's kind of like, you know, the old Battlefield 1942 game. That's what you need to see, is people not putting all of their eggs into one basket, right? I'm trying to stay as cliche-free as possible, but it's not happening. But that's what we need to see from content creators, you know, the ability to shift from game to game, because it's not always the game itself that is what pushes these channels. A lot of the time it's the character or the person behind the camera, right? It's the person that you're watching play the game. It's not always just the gameplay. It's part of it. I'd probably say it's about 30% is the content that you're actually just showing on the screen of your gameplay. The rest of that is your personality coming out and being able to engage with your audience. Yeah. That is the biggest thing. That's what people come on to see. That, well, and or, I mean, and it's probably maybe 5 or 10% even, and as toxic as it could be, I'd say it's probably part of the community of the chat that goes on in the background, right? Is being able to not just engage with your audience by saying, okay, here's what's going on, here's what I could be doing better, here's what's going wrong, but being able to, you know, to be able to quickly scroll with your eyes and saying, okay, let me pick somebody out and let me just have a quick conversation with them, and just having that whole cyclical interaction with your fans of the game and, you know, communicating with them, that's what's most important with them. So,
well, that's like just taking Gathalion as the example. That's what he's betting on. People aren't there to watch him play Destiny. People are there to interact with Gathalion. So Gathalion's taking, and again, I'm don't know his business, I'm just speculating, he's just taking the gamble, let me unbrand from this now while the community is at its lowest, reinvent myself as a quote-unquote variety streamer, because I guess he'd been streaming a lot of Fortnite anyways, and, you know, his numbers were still good, and start presenting myself that way versus locking myself into one IP and into one ecosystem. And I haven't followed up enough, but I'm pretty sure Professor Broman's doing something similar. Like I said, I know Lupo and Triple Rec are also doing something similar. You know, Datto obviously doesn't know exactly what he's going to do, but it's an interesting thing. And I think this is a great case study of people moving forward, you know, because this whole streaming culture is still in its infancy. So there's going to be stumbling blocks and mistakes made along the way. But I think this is going to be a nice footnote in history of, if you want to be a streamer and you want to make a career out of it, do not just say, hey, I'm going to be, because I saw someone say this in our chat, the Pac-Man streamer, because guess what? People might not like Pac-Man and they might go away. So you better make it about you and not the game, if you want to be successful. And look, I'm saying this because obviously we're on Twitch live and we stream, but I mean, we're peanuts compared to what the big guys do. You know, we may never be that big of a streamer. We may be one day, I don't know, but we're still learning this platform as well, and trying to balance being able to be a podcast and stream games and do all that at the same time, which actually brings me to something else while Pete was talking. I was thinking of Gamertag Radio, and Danny, obviously you can correct me if I'm wrong on this, but Gamertag Radio actually went through this as a podcast X amount of years ago, because look at the name. It's Gamertag Radio. That is Xbox, right? Mm-hmm. So it was very Xbox heavy early on, and at some point you obviously made the conscious decision, we ain't talking about just Xbox, we're going to talk about PlayStation, we're going to talk about Nintendo, PC and everything else, because you weren't going to just lock yourself into only talking about Xbox. So, I mean, maybe I'm wrong on that, but that's just my perception from the outside looking in before I joined the podcast.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think the reason why I did that was because gaming was getting even better. There was more choices. It was a way for us to have better conversations about, you know, about other games that's not available on Xbox. And I was like, man, it's just gaming in general. Let's talk about everything, man. And that's why early on I decided to make that change, you know, and not just depend on just one thing, you know. So I learned from that, from before GTR, during GTR. And I think we're in a good path, man. The show has been growing even more. We're getting a lot of games for reviews, and we're building relationships with other companies and stuff, and it helped us. I think it was hard at first to make that change, but I think we did it at the right time.
for us. So, but yeah, you're right, Paris. You're truly right.
Yeah.
All right, but we have fan mail. So I think it's time for us to do fan mail because we haven't done this in a while. So here goes. It's time for fan mail.
Fan mail at gamertagradio.com.
All right. So we have a couple voicemails. We have emails. Which one we should go first, guys? Should start a voicemail or read an email? You tell me.
Let's read the motivation one. I'll read this because I'm going to be honest about something after I read it.
Okay, go for it.
Okay. So we got an email from Marquise, and he's saying, do you guys ever lose motivation, passion when it comes to podcasting or streaming? Or maybe just feel like you need a break? What do you do during these times? I recently lost all passion for streaming due to games I love, communities falling apart. Wonder which one. Love you guys. So thank you for that, Marquise. And I'm just going to be pretty blunt and honest about it. I lose motivation all the time with podcasting and streaming. But what gets me through it is Danny and Pete and my responsibility to the show. There's plenty of times like, and I know I've talked about this a little bit already. I'm under an extreme amount of pressure at work right now, just going through audits and just everything that's going on. And I don't necessarily sometimes feel like being on the podcast or streaming. If you've noticed personally, my own streaming games, I've not done it in a while because I got a lot going on between work and just family and everything like that. So I've kind of lost that motivation, not to mention Destiny 2 went, so that kind of took that away too. So I'm going to get back into it. Don't get me wrong. But I suffer through it. I think it's just human nature to suffer through it. But if you're passionate about something, it's kind of like going to the gym. There is many a day where I'm like, dude, I do not want to go to the gym. What the hell am I doing? Just go eat some cakes and pies and relax, right?
Popeyes.
Go eat some Popeyes with some hot sauce. I'd be good. But I just push through it. And it's the same with this, with streaming anything. Now, I know it's a little different with streaming because if you're just not motivated to do it, that could kind of show while you're on camera. Versus, you know, if you're just doing a podcast or something, maybe you're just playing a game offline, people aren't going to necessarily see your emotions as you're doing it. You can kind of almost quote unquote fake it a little bit. But I think it's just human nature to lack motivation. But you have to kind of be honest with yourself and ask, why are you doing this in the first place? And you'll probably get the answer or the motivation if you want to continue at that point. So just my two cents on that. But I suffered through it a lot.
Yeah, I mean, I think, and you're right, Paris, I think having the right people that's part of your team, I think that's a way for you also to get motivated and stuff. You know, I'm always motivated because of Paris and Pete. You know, there's certain things I learned from them that I was like, man, you know what? I want to be a better podcast. I want to be a better streamer. You know, I know there's been people talking a lot about this whole YouTube thing going on with the programming changes. That shouldn't stop you for the things that you would like to do. I think little challenges like that should motivate you to even work even harder. Don't let any situations like that get you down and make you stop on the stuff that you would like to do. That should be that should pump you up to do other things, man. And make things better. Make your content even better because of that, man. Don't let that things like stop you, man. At all, man. At all. Look, I was watching a video from one of our friends that, you know, he's been a YouTube partner for a long time, and he even said, dude, this is good. Motivate, man. This should motivate you to work, man. Don't, and at the same time, get out of your house, man, and meet people. You know, don't depend on a company if you want to be successful. You got to depend on yourself, man. Got to depend on yourself. I've been through a lot in my life when it comes to the podcast, now with Twitch and so on. And nothing stopping, man. I kept on going, man. You know, and like I said, having the right people with you, that also helps, man. If you have a
people on your team that's always negative and complaining and posting stuff online, that's going to hurt you, man. You're surrounded by negativity everywhere, man. You don't need that in your life, man. Have people that is going to push you forward, man. That's all I wanted to say. But Pete, you want to say anything about this?
No, that's pretty much it. That's
no, say something. You say something. You don't. No, I'm kidding.
At the end of the day, it's all consistency, and we've seen it from everybody. I mean, everybody wants to jump into content creation or jump into being a podcast because those are the hot topics now. Those are the hot, you know, the hot button items that people want to jump into. But it's not something that you can do quickly and expect results. You have to put in the work, right? It's not just, you know, automatic success, you know, success. There's the unicorns out there that it happens for them and it works. But those are the real quick success stories, that just happen to happen, right? You have to put in the work, you have to put in the effort, and you have to, you know, you just got to put in the time. It's unless you're the guy that won the $450 million Powerball the other day, success doesn't come easy. And it doesn't matter whether you're doing, you know, you're a security engineer, you're an IT director, or, you know, you're a content creator on YouTube or on Twitch, you have to put in the time and effort to succeed. I mean, it's a longstanding, you know, theory, and it's there for a reason. You know, nobody wins, you know, immediately. You have to put in the time. I mean, do you think, and I hate to say this, do you think that the Patriots are so good as a football team because, you know, they got the winning formula overnight? No, it was, you know, it took time for them to finally get the right coach and the right players and the right system in place. And that's why they succeed. Mm-hmm. It takes time. It takes effort. And, you know, like I've said, and I've said it before, it takes failures because you need to overcome those failures and you need to succeed. You know, it's how you get up. It's not how many times you fall down. It's how many times you stand up afterwards. So, you know, if it wasn't, I quit for what, a year, like 2-3 years ago, I quit for like, I think it was like a year, 'cause I had so many things going on between work and personal life, et cetera. I took a year off from the show and I needed that. I needed to get regrounded, you know, 'cause I had so many things going on and I had to get perspective and get things going, you know, from my personal life, you know, settled before I could start putting, you know, refocusing on GTR. It was just a burnout. I mean, Paris did quit. He retired and we reached out and you know, pulled him back into the fold, you know. So, you know, it's there. It's just a matter of, you know, how much you can, you know, and if you have to pull back, you have to pull back. It's just a matter, you know, that's just what it is, you know, and it's just, you are the most important person, you know, and I'm not just saying you as in, you know, one specific person. I'm saying you yourself are the most important person in your life, and you have to take, you know, you have to take those moments to just step back and reevaluate sometimes.
There are so many reasons why I got into teaching.
One of the best things is the light bulb moment.
When you see a pupil suddenly understand something, that's really, really special.
Every child is so full of potential, and the thing that makes me proudest to be a teacher is seeing them realise what they are capable of. I don't think any other job can give you the same satisfaction.
That's why I chose to teach.
You could get £26,000 tax-free to train, search, apply to teach. Selected subjects only, subject to eligibility.
You're listening to Gamertag Radio.
All right, let's go with the next question. This is from Brendan. He was like, "Hey, little Gamertag Radio. I have been reading about what could be coming out for Halo 6. Mm-hmm. From what I've read, people want to see something like Call of Duty Zombies. What's your thoughts on this? Thank you for being the best gaming podcast out there. I've been listening since summer of 2017.
No, please no. Don't do that with Halo. I don't want to see that with Halo. That would just be my personal opinion. To me, I've actually been thinking about this. I would love to see them iterate on, what is it called right now, Warzone? I'd love to see them basically come up with a Warzone 2.0. Because I know that I need to play Halo 5 again. It's been a while since I played that multiplayer, but from what I hear, and shout out to Podtacular, those guys do a great job over there. it's really good right now. You know, we kind of talk about how games stub their toe at launch and then they get better later on, like we've been saying with The Division. I guess Halo 5 is right there with it. I guess that multiplayer is very strong right now and really good. So I'd love to see them do some more with that. Hey, less emphasis on the loot box nonsense. I don't know where that is right now in Halo 5, but I know that was kind of an issue early on. But yeah, that's what I want to see. God, no zombies though. Don't do that. I don't want to see that with Halo.
Do something new, man. Yeah. I don't want companies to copy other companies and so on. Nah, I don't want that. I know we have voicemails. Let's play some voicemail, Paris.
I love how Pete didn't get an opinion on that. You just whatever.
Pete, been quiet. So I don't know, Pete. You gonna say something? You good?
I'm like the redheaded stepchild. Unless I'm hosting, like I have no. I have no purpose on this show. No. Halo and zombies. I don't know. I mean, you've already got your characters. You know, your established characters. I don't think we need to zombify everything to try to re-kickstart things. You know, or re-kickstart components of a franchise. That I think would almost be a cop out for 343 and Microsoft if they added zombies in there. If they want to try to jump on a train that people are doing, maybe do a battle royale. You know, if they want to, I'm just throwing it out there. Do something like that. Do like a battle royale style game with Halo. Jump out of, you know, just try to do something different. If you want to jump on a train, I don't think zombies is the right thing to do. There's way too many zombie games going on right now out in the wild that I think that would almost seem like a cop out. Almost seemed like a cheap parlor trick. That's my personal. That's my two cents.
All right, now we should play voicemails.
Do we have your permission?
Oh, that's right. Oh, that's right. I have to play them. You don't play them. Okay. All right. Let me grab number one right now.
Hey guys, my name is Nelson. I've been listening to you guys for a while now and listening to your latest episode with Paris talking about PUBG and review scores. I don't know about PUBG. I haven't personally played it, so I can't tell you if it deserves a perfect 10, but I do agree that we need to do away with these review scores. If you see a game get a 5 out of 10 on IGN or any other gaming publication, that more than likely tells you and anyone else that looks at it that's not worth your time. And that may not be true. Not every game has to be a perfect 10. You know, if a game does something that's been done before and it does it well enough that you enjoy it and waste a little bit of time with it, then it doesn't have to be anything more than that. And if we can't get rid of these scores, can we please change the system? I'm tired of seeing these like 4.2 or 6.5 out of 10. Like, just give it a whole number, please. Anyways, keep up the great work, guys. You guys are definitely helping these graveyard shifts go by much faster. So thanks a lot.
All right. And thank you, Nelson, for that voicemail. Really appreciate it. The smooth, quiet storm. That's a good voice. but no, I mean, you know, we obviously talked about this already with the stuff with the review scores and all that, and you know how outraged I was with the PUBG score, and you know people are yelling at me on Twitter about having an opinion on that, but whatever. I will still say that this entire review score thing needs to change from what it is, because at the end of the day, all it is an opinion. And we've been so trained over the years that, like he said, if you see a 5 out of 10, you're gonna say, oh, that game's crap, avoid it. And if you see something that says 10, you're instantly like, this game is perfect, is one of the greatest games ever made. Oh my God, run out and go get it. And speaking on that, because Polygon actually did a podcast and they kind of explained why they gave PUBG a 10. And I actually agree with everything that they said in there other than giving it a 10. Like IGN gave it a 9.5. Have no problem with IGN giving PUBG a 9.5 because that's what it is. It is a really great game that has some technical issues right now that just hit 1.0, and it's a lot of fun if you jump in and play it, and I recommend anyone that gets a chance to jump in and play it. But to give it a 10 in today's... So look, let's put it this way. Polygon can't just decide, well, our justification of a 10 is different than everyone else's justification for a 10. And whether you realize that or not, that's just the way it is. Go read the fine print. I think get rid of scores altogether. Just give opinions. Just put at the end, explain why you think it's such a great game and say either, yes, run out and go buy it or don't, or tread lightly. That's all you got to do, in my opinion. So, again, I know we talked about this already, so I'll be quiet.
Pete?
It's, you want to, I don't know. I'm okay with the rating score. I just think there just needs to be a level of responsibility when you're giving them. You may maybe not have to give them a 1 through 10 number. Just give it, you know, a 1 of 3. Give it a buy, don't buy, or hold score. I think that in and of itself is fair enough. But you know, people want ratings to be able to gauge their whether a title or a product is purchasable or not. You know, and maybe a going to a 6.57 would sway a purchase versus giving them a 5.5 or a 5 or something like that. I mean, I see it on comic books all the time. You know, when I'm buying slabbed games or slabbed books, and you know, it's a 7 over a 7.5. You know, I'm going to go for the 7.5 every time, just because it's just a little bit higher of a rating. But in the case of a game, I think it's simple enough. If you just did a buy, don't buy, or hold, right? I think that would be fair enough right now, as opposed to going through the 1 through 10 thing. So that's my 2 cents.
All right, so let's go with the next voicemail.
Yes, let's go with the next voicemail playing now.
Hey, what's going on, Gamer Tag Radio? This is Jacob giving you guys a call from Charlotte. Real quick question. With the Nintendo Switch current popularity, we know Pokemon's coming out. What lessons or gameplay mechanics do you think that that they've learned, that Pokemon has learned from the popularity of Pokemon Go, that they could apply to the Switch version of Pokemon, if any? Because the Switch is, you know, a mobile platform, so, you know, I guess some of those could possibly be, you know, some mechanics could be used on the Switch, but who knows. Other than that, second question real quickly, of the games that are already announced, do you think any of the games that have already been announced will actually be launch games for the PlayStation 5 and the Xbox, whatever number they decide to give it, a random letter, you know, for the next generation systems that should be coming out in 2019 or 2020? My guess for the number one game that might be a next generation game would be Anthem. Thank you guys, though. Once again, love the show. Keep up the fantastic work.
All right, Danny, you are the resident Nintendo expert. So what are your thoughts?
I think that, of course, maybe make the world bigger for Pokemon. Now, do you think that Nintendo could do something similar to have features similar to like the mobile phone version to the Nintendo Switch? Do you think that's possible, or you think they can't do that?
It's possible, because it's at this point it would just be a matter of adding a SIM card to the hardware. Now, whether it's got the technology already in there to do that, to support it, and then you've got to worry, and then you've got to think about, well, what about all of them, 70 million units that are out in the wild right now that are not SIM capable? So then now you've just alienated a large player base of existing customers. That won't happen anytime in the immediate future. We're talking the next iteration. I mean, hell, it hasn't even been out a year. It's been 10 months since it's been out, as a whole. So if they're going to do that, it would have to be some kind of a 2.0 piece of hardware. 'Cause unless they're going to be able to USB a SIM card, or, you know, put in, who knows, has anybody done an in-depth breakdown of the hardware? Is there a slot that you could put in a SIM card that we haven't seen? That'd be the only thing.
Or maybe connected to your, that maybe connected to your phone. And I think also, I'm just coming up with random stuff, but I think one thing they need to really focus on is the online features, make it better, a better experience. If Nintendo really wants to have like a new online experience with Pokemon, they need to do that if they want people to subscribe to the Nintendo Online service next year.
You know what, Nintendo? You know what Nintendo needs to do? And I'm not even joking when I'm saying this. This is dead serious. First of all, remember the Vita had 3G in it back in the day, but the pricing was ridiculous. That's why it failed. I'm not even kidding. And he works for Pokemon right now. Go get E, who used to be the head of Xbox Live. Go get Eric and put him on Nintendo and build out their online infrastructure, for the love of God. Because that's... what you're saying, that's what you need. I don't even want to think about some Pokemon online stuff with the Switch on the go until you have a real online interface ready to go. I mean, at a minimum, you need to get it where PlayStation Network is right now. And obviously, Xbox Live is gold standard for all this stuff. But you need something reliable that I know when I sign into it and I start giving your money, my money, I can depend on it. Does anyone here have confidence that Nintendo in 2018 is going to have a dependable online service? I don't. Until they got to prove me wrong, because history says they won't.
Yeah. I mean, maybe that's the reason they pushed back the whole Nintendo online service, because originally it was free until fall of 2017, but they were like, nah, we're going to delete it till sometime 2018. So maybe because of the feedback, maybe because of that, they're making the changes. So who knows? We'll see.
Yeah, we'll see.
And I hope it's true. I hope it's like that.
Yeah.
So now, one question that he asked about the games that was already announced that maybe it's not coming out for this generation. Maybe it's coming out for the next one. Do you think that's even possible? Like a game like Anthem not coming out for the Xbox One, PlayStation 4? Maybe PlayStation 5 and the next Xbox?
No, because again, it's all depending on what you think. I know I told you guys this offline, but like Podcast Unlocked, some of the guys, you know, Ryan McCaffrey, those guys, they seem to think that PlayStation 5 might come out in 2019 and the next Xbox in 2020. I will still say both are 2020. And in that case, an Anthem. Nah, Anthem will be on PS4 and Xbox One, because it'll come at the worst. It'll come out holiday 2019. I tend to think it'll be spring 2019. I don't think it'll make this holiday, but yeah, it'll be out before the next consoles or next generation of consoles come out. So no, Anthem will be out now, I think.
Now, my question to you guys, do you think that it's important when a company launches a brand new console? Do you think having a lot of games at launch is better, or do it in a way like Nintendo, have a lot of games throughout the year instead?
I think it's important to have a special game within the first year of the console coming out. You bring up the Switch. The Switch obviously had two very special games come out in its first year, with Zelda came at launch, and then Mario Odyssey came out later in the year. If you just go back through the history of consoles, there's always been the successful ones. There's always been a special game that has come out in that first year. Xbox, as an example, at the top of my head, obviously had Halo. You know, Nintendo 64 had Mario 64. Super Nintendo had Super Mario World. On and on. Go back. I mean, you can go through the list. Won't go through them all. But I think, and I've had this argument before. I've said it 10 million times. Speaking of E, because said this to E, you were with me when I said this to him at E3 2011, I guess that was, with Halo 4. Why the hell did Halo 4 come out on the Xbox 360? If Halo 4, and you didn't have to change nothing about it, it could have been the same exact game. If Halo 4 came out at launch with the Xbox One, we're having a different conversation about the Xbox One right now. I guarantee it. Because that was a system selling IP. People would have ran out at $500 to go buy an Xbox One, because it was the next Halo with Master Chief. And we had not seen Master Chief since 2007 at that point. It was would have been a special game for the Xbox One. And I hope here's my crazy theory. You guys probably disagree with me. The next Xbox will have either a Halo or a Gears launch with it, because they're special IPs in their portfolio. PlayStation probably has Horizon Zero Dawn 2 or something like that launch And when I say launch, I'm talking in the quote unquote launch window that'll come out with the PlayStation 5. Because that's how you get people. That's how you get brand loyalty, because you put out that special game and the people are like, I got to have it. And they run out and they throw money at it and they go get it. You know, all of us got a Switch in the first year because they had games that we wanted. And even if you remember, as skeptical as I was of the Switch, what did I kept saying the whole time? I'm going to get it when Mario comes out. I'm going to get it when Mario comes out, because I knew that was going to be a game that I wanted with the Nintendo Switch. Pete, who had no inclination at all to get a Switch, wound up getting a Switch. Guess what? When Mario Odyssey came out, now he's in love with it. You know what I mean?
Yep.
That's what these companies are going to have to do moving forward, in my opinion. You can't have just a special piece of hardware. Let's just take the Xbox One X as an example. Let's say that was the next Xbox. Amazing piece of tech, amazing piece of hardware. Where are games for it? Give me games for it. I'm just making an example. I'm not saying that's the case right now. But the next Xbox, if you have it, it's amazing, but you have no games for it in the first year, why is anyone buying it? That's exactly the question, you know?
Very true. Exactly. Yeah. And you know why I agree with you, Paris, about Halo 4. You know why I agree with you? Because that was the beginning of the next trilogy, 4, yeah. 5, and 6. Mm-hmm. So it would have been perfect for the console, right? And Stepto was also there in that conversation.
Yeah, so I was going to say it too. Yep.
Yeah. I do want to mention this too, because Xbox 360, there wasn't no major special game first party wise. I think what helped the 360 at that time when it came out was two games, and it was even first party. It was from other companies, third parties.
I know what you got to say. Yeah, go ahead.
Oblivion. That was one.
Yep.
And Fight Night.
Oh, I got another one for you. Geometry Wars.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. I forgot about that.
Now,
one.
The 360 is interesting because
the 360 Geometry Wars wasn't a launch title, was it?
Yes, it was. Yes,
that
it was
my first digital. That was my first digital game that I purchased through the Xbox 360 online.
$5. Yeah, that was the game I actually played more than anything when the 360 launched, was Geometry Wars. 360 is interesting in that scenario because while they weren't successful games, I think because of the transition to HD and everything that went along with that, they stood out and carried the 360 early on. Was Perfect Dark Zero and Cameo. And those were two games at launch for the Xbox 360. You know, they wind up not being these amazing titles or anything, but the anticipation and the quote unquote hype for them was huge back then. Go back to 2005 and think about that launch. Because, you know, I went to Zero Hour and I got to play all those games, you know, that 24 hours ahead of time. They let us just play them as long as we want. People were pushing each other on the ground trying to get the Perfect Dark Zero because that's how highly anticipated it was at the time. You know what I mean? And like I said, wind up not being all that. But remember, they were doing the whole, and Project Gotham Racing 3, was it?
Yeah.
It was three. Remember, they were doing the Gotham TV thing. They were doing the Perfect Dark Zero had their, what was it called, Kill TV or whatever. That was the first, if you think about it, the first where we are now with Twitch, with streaming, where you're watching other people play games. My Xbox Live was trying that back in 2005. Ultimately, it didn't go anywhere. But, you know, these were new things that people had never seen before. So that's kind of just the point I'm making. If you don't have that killer game, you got to have some kind of killer feature or new tech that no one's ever seen before that's going to push people towards your console. And 360 had 720p HD. We didn't have that before then in gaming. And then, like I said, they had the wireless controllers with the 360. We had that before, but this was more mainstream because obviously the GameCube had it. And then you had, like I said, the whole Kill TV streaming thing as well. You know, that was kind of the killer features for the 360 going into that era.
Yeah. Yeah. I mentioned Oblivion and Fight Night. The reason why I mentioned those is because when those games came out, the reviews was really, really high.
Mm-hmm.
Great, great reviews. Perfect Dark, Cameo, and even Project Gotham. Like they were okay. It wasn't horrible games, but it wasn't like Fight Night and Oblivion at that time when it came out.
There was another
great game too.
Great
reviews, hype too.
There was another
Geometry
game.
Geometry Wars got better reviews than Perfect Dark.
Yeah.
That was a $5 game.
There was another game too that came out in that 6 month window, because I think that was also a spring 2006 game, was Ghost Recon. I forget the tagline.
Oh, yes.
But it was that Ghost Recon game too. And then also remember, Microsoft hyped Gears of War at the reveal back in 2005. So we knew Gears of War was coming out, you know, by the end of 2006. So that was also another huge game, which, again, we had never seen anything like that before with the cover system and just all the stuff that they were doing, you know, with that shooter at that time. So that was big for them as well, because people knew, oh my God, here comes this amazing game from Cliffy B, you know, within the calendar year that we're going to be able to play.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Totally agree with that, man. Woo, great conversation. Great memories. Pete, you want to say anything about what we just said?
Hey, it's what got me podcasting. Think about it. You know, I know you talk about this in the doc. We talk about this, but that was that era that I was like, you know what? I want to be a podcaster. I want to talk about that stuff, because gaming was changing at that time from what we knew it as to this new HD era and just everything that was coming. Because obviously the 360 was coming out. We knew PlayStation 3 was coming out a year later. And then we knew that a new Nintendo was going to come after that. So that was kind of that, starting that 2005 year, that's kind of where we are now. Started this whole era of gaming, online gaming, Xbox Live, PlayStation Network, all that, you know, happened then back in 2005.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's cyclical in nature. It's how technology usually works. And we're in that window now where massive changes are going to come across. And it's just a matter of how the industry and as how consumers, you know, just absorb it and use it. So I think there's still a while to go before online gaming really gets to be where it can be. I still think that the infrastructure for the US in general, and I can't say for other countries, I just think that the internet infrastructure here in the United States needs to still has some tweaking. And obviously I don't want to get into net neutrality and things like that, but there are some things that are holding us back from being on par with the rest of the world. And once that happens is when you'll really start to see a technological revolution with regards to gaming.
Well, I know we have a couple more fan mail questions. Pete, you want to read an email?
This one's going to be from Bro Berman, one of our GTR community members. Shout out to him. What's
GTR
up, guys?
GTR crew!
Woo! What's up, guys? My question is, what are your thoughts on making some big games currently, like Destiny the Division, into a release scheme similar to games like World of Warcraft or RuneScape? These games have one title associated with them, i.e. you're not going to go out and buy RuneScape 2 or WoW 67, but over the years have developed some extensive libraries of content while keeping some of the core mechanics of the game similar and keeping fans dedicated to the game. We saw with Destiny 2, they messed with some of the mechanics that the fans of Destiny 1 loved, and because of those changes, Destiny 2 has been receiving some negative feedback from the community as a whole. Do you think having one title with expansions, DLC, etc. for 5 years or more would be a more viable strategy than releasing sequels? I'd love to hear your thoughts on this, and as always, keep up the fabulous work you guys do. Thanks, and if you record on Sunday, I'd like to make a shout out to the Vikings. Skull.
Skull, because my wife's family, they're all from Minnesota, so they're going to be going crazy later today. But what you're saying is right, because honestly, that's what I thought Destiny was going to be from the get-go. I didn't think we'd have a Destiny 2 or 3. I thought it would be Destiny and then just expansions with names associated with them, which ironically enough, if they would have done that this time and then said it was just Destiny and the Destiny 2 was a quote unquote expansion, people are like, what the hell just happened? Why did you strip everything out? People would have lost their minds. But that should be the formula. I mean, World of Warcraft is the template for that, where it's World of Warcraft and then there's just, we're expanding upon it every, you know, year, 2 years, or whatever the case may be. And people just stay in that world, keep paying their $15 a month and play it, you know?
Now, do you think that a subscription-based game is viable in 2017, 2018? I mean obviously...
It comes down to content, honestly. Right. If Let's take the Division as an example, because we talk about Destiny way too damn much on the show. If the Division were to be $10 a month, and there was just this, it would have to be a steady stream of content. But if there was a steady stream of content, we constantly had new things to do in it. I don't know about you. I would pay it. The only reason I don't play World of Warcraft is because I would have got divorced. I would be divorced today. I would not have my wife today if I would have jumped into World of Warcraft, because I would have got addicted to it and I would have never left, because there would have been content and things to play, right? Whereas, you know, obviously Destiny's big struggle is they can't keep up with the demand. I mean, the Division, there's a ton of content for me right now because I didn't play the game for 2 years. So I'm like sitting there just like overwhelmed looking at all the stuff to do. But there will be a point in time where I get quote unquote caught up. And then it was like, all right, now what? You know, so subscription only works if, you know, you're constantly putting new things into the game. So I think on a console side, going to be very hard to do. Whereas obviously, you know, Blizzard has figured out a formula to keep people satisfied for the most part with World of Warcraft. God, I can't talk. So, I mean, maybe, but I doubt it. I think the current format of $60 game supplemented with DLC expansion packs is probably the formula that we're going to see for any game, you know, be it The Division, Destiny, Anthem, etc., on a console.
I mean, it's working for Ubisoft. You know, why can't Activision?
Is it? Is it?
Yeah.
I don't think that. Let's
look at Rainbow Six. Rainbow Six, for example. I know it's not open world, but, you know.
Yeah, I was going to say that's different. We're talking that pure open world shared shooter verse. Rainbow Six, obviously, at its core is a multiplayer game. And yeah, they're throwing new maps at it and they're doing it. Look, if you want to talk about, and I know this is tangent a little bit, if you want to talk about a game and a community that does it right as far as communication and giving a proper roadmap on what to expect throughout the year, it's Rainbow Six. Rainbow Six is the poster child for that. What Justin and those guys over there are doing is flat out amazing. That's why when I got to meet Justin at PAX, we're at the Twitch party or whatever, and I looked at him, he looked at me, we're like, hey, I know you. And then that's all we talked about was their roadmap and how they're doing it, because that's what every community needs to follow. Just copycat what Rainbow Six does and go from there. Because even when they have a drought on content in Rainbow Six, you knew that 3 months ago because they told you, look, we're going to have a gap here because we're going to be working on this, but then you can expect new content at this date. And I think really that's all the community cares about. Let us know what's going on. Don't keep us in the dark. So when we know we get to February, there's not going to be new content and I need to wait until May or whatever the case may be, right? And you're like, all right, I'll plan accordingly. Either keep playing what we got right now or I'll take a break and go play something else, but then I'll be back in May because I know there's new content, you know?
I mean, they are doing also pretty good with Ghost Recon. That's been updated a lot too throughout
the year. Oh, yeah, the Predator thing, the multiplayer they put out, it's been great.
There are so many reasons why I got into teaching.
One of the best things is the light bulb moment.
When you see a pupil suddenly understand something, that's really, really special.
Every child is so full of potential. And the thing that makes me proudest to be a teacher is seeing them realise what they are capable of.
I don't think any other job can give you the same satisfaction.
That's why I chose to teach.
You could get £26,000 tax-free to train, search, apply to teach. Selected subjects only, subject to eligibility.
You're listening to Gamertag Radio.
All right, so we know we have one more voicemail. Let's play it, and then we'll wrap it up.
Hey, what's up, Gamertag Radio? I hope you guys are doing well. What's going on, Danny, Pete, and Paris? I hope you guys are doing great, man. I just on a quick side note, I just wanted to say to Pete and Paris, I really enjoyed the latest podcast where you two brothers were on there, you know, having a conversation about Microsoft and possibly some of the different moves that they could make. I really thought it was interesting to hear about the cameo thing possibly coming back and all of that great stuff. But anyway, just to try to shorten this up, the question that I wanted to ask you guys was, Is there a particular system that if you had the chance to get it, it could span back to any era in gaming? What would that system be? No system is off limits. It could be the Magnavox Odyssey. It could even be the Vectrex, which is the one that I would pick. That looks amazing, but it is very expensive. So I just wanted to get you guys' opinion on that. As always, I'm a huge fan of the podcast, and I love the work that you brothers continue to do. And with that being said, you guys take care and have a good one. Bye-bye.
Right. That was the infamous Keon. So, Pete, why don't you go first on this one?
If there was a particular system that I could go back in time and get, I'd probably say it'd be the Intellivision or Intellivision 2. It wasn't my first console. My first console I ever had was the Odyssey. I might, depending on the day of the week, I might flip back and forth between the Odyssey and or Intellivision. Simply because those are games that, or those are systems that highlighted a specific time in my childhood as a kid growing up, spending time with my cousin and just hours upon hours upon hours of playing games. And that's probably be the console that I'd go back and get, just because it just harkens back to a time when I was a wee little lad, playing video games with my cousin. It was so much fun.
Man, I have two, man. Because I'm thinking
you can only have one.
It's gonna be tough. It's gonna be tough, man. Because they're both special. But
no, what are they?
Dreamcast and Super Nintendo. Of course, you guys already know why the Dreamcast, because I just love the system. I think it was ahead of its time.
Oh, it 100% was.
But when that system came out, it was special, man, because I had Ready to Rumble. I had Sonic Adventure. And I know the other games came out in the future. And then playing online for the first time, like Choo Choo Rock and all that stuff, it was just special at the time, man, you know? Really, really cool. And competing with other people from across the globe, you know, through a 56K modem. I think that was awesome, man. And Super Nintendo was because, man, playing Final Fight for the first time, I was like, this is an arcade game now, and I have it here at home. Playing that and playing Super Mario World, which was really cool. I think that Super Mario Brothers 3 was a little bit harder, in my opinion. But Super Mario World was, like, long. It was a very long game. Very, very long game. Truly, truly love that, man. And I think those two, man, those two were like a very special, special consoles for me, man. Those two right there.
I would say for me, and it's funny he brought up Vectrex. I had the Vectrex back in the day. I used to love that thing. What was it? Mine something. It was like a Asteroids ripoff game. I used to play it all the time. For me, because I was thinking systems I didn't have as a kid. And it would be the ColecoVision. I didn't have a ColecoVision when I was a kid. I had a 2600. I had an Intellivision, but I never had a ColecoVision. My cousin had a ColecoVision. And I used to love going to his house because the Donkey Kong on the ColecoVision was better than the 2600 generic block version that I had as a kid. So I used to love going over playing that. He had Frontline. He had Smurfs. I don't know if you remember Smurfs was on the ColecoVision. I used to love that. So if I go back in time and own one, it would be the ColecoVision and just all those games that came out for it. I'll co-sign what Danny said about the Dreamcast as well, because Dreamcast, but let's be honest, Microsoft basically ripped off Sega, right? Can we agree on that? They pretty much looked at what Sega did with the Dreamcast and just implemented that into what the original Xbox was, and obviously they added the hard drive into it and, you know, iterated on their online plans. But we don't have modern online gaming today without the Dreamcast. And I will still say the most special moment of my life was NFL gaming life was NFL 2K1 and playing online for the very first time. It was the Buccaneers versus the Buffalo Bills. I still remember this to this day. I had the keyboard, and me and the dude I was playing, we were trash talking each other over a keyboard. I'll never forget that. I was like, oh my God, this worked.
Amazing.
Yeah, it's amazing.
It was amazing.
Oh, man. Yeah, that was great.
But it's crazy because you had to do it quick. Remember, guys, we're using a keyboard and playing a game through a console through a TV. So you have to like type very quick and then, okay, let's go play with the controller, which is weird. We weren't used to that, man.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh my God, it was so dope.
Yeah, that was such a great time. Another system I didn't have, but I don't think there were really any amazing games for it. Well, two really, was Atari 5200 and the Atari 7800. Nothing stands out to me that was a must-have game on either system. I just knew I wanted to have them because I knew they were the new Ataris, but I don't think there was really any exciting games on them that I can remember anyways.
There was a couple systems that I wanted, but I never got the chance to buy it. TurboGrafx, I think that was cool.
Yeah.
I remember going to the store and like, the first 16-bit system. Yeah, I was like, oh my God, it's more powerful than the other systems. Oh my God. That 3DO was my cousin had that system. And he had Star Wars. I can't remember exactly the game for that game. For Star Wars, I can't remember. But he scratched the game by mistake, right? So I always would get to the last level, and there was one part it would always stop because it was scratched. I was like, oh my God, I'm about to finish this game, man. Every single time. And also, Atari had Jaguar. I never had that system. Yeah. I'm very, very, very curious about that.
Because now you got me going down memory lane on that. So I'm trying to remember, but I know like my best friend, he had the TurboGrafx 16, and it's funny because he had Bonk's Adventure, and we literally blew through that game in one day, literally one day, done. And then it was like, all right, now what? And they didn't really have any other great games on TurboGrafx. I think, was it the 3DO? Because when I was in the Navy, no, it wasn't Neo Geo. I think it was a 3DO. It was the Panasonic system. So was that the 3DO? I don't remember.
Yeah, it's 3DO. Yeah,
it was okay.
3DO.
It was. He had that, and it was like one of my buddies in the Navy, and he had whatever space shooter game on it, and it was freaking terrible. But we thought it was so cool because, you know, back in the day. But back in those mid-90s, you know what's funny? My favorite game, because we played it damn near every day when I was in the Navy on the ship, was Sega Genesis. And it was Celtics versus Lakers. Oh my God, the trash talk that we used to have in that game back in the freaking day, man. It was so cool. But yeah, just that nostalgia of some of the older games. You know, Pete and I were even talking about this on the episode you weren't on, Danny. I guarantee you going back and playing them now, they just don't hold up at all. But a lot of that stuff has very fond memories to me, you know,
nostalgia, and I like
to
factor.
Just keep that nostalgia in here. Cause if I see it again on the screen, I'll probably be like, ugh, I ain't playing that anymore.
But I have to mention this though, man, this I think was ahead of its time. Sega Channel. I had that.
Yeah, well, again, Sega was such a pioneer in where we are today for gaming because they were the first ones to attempt a lot of that stuff. Speaking of old systems, another one, actually, I still have it. I should probably go try and dig it out of a box somewhere. I have the Japanese Sega Saturn because I was in Japan at the time, and I bought it and brought it back to the States, which I didn't realize at the time. The Japanese version, the American games didn't work on it. I didn't know how that worked back then, you know, but so all I have is I have Virtua Fighter. I have a game called D. And one more. I'd have to go dig them out of the box, but I have the Japanese Sega Saturn, and it's gray versus I think it was black in the United States or whatever.
Yeah. I think the reason why Saturn failed big time here in the States, Sega was panicking because Sony was going to launch the next PlayStation, right? And Sega, without telling the developers, they were like, okay, we're going to release the system now, this year. Like ahead of schedule. I think it was like 6 months early, and everybody's like, whoa, freaking out. So there was not that many games when it came out, man. That, and also PlayStation at one of their press conferences. I don't know if it was E3 or I don't know if it was CES. I can't remember exactly. They did the same exact thing. What happened with PlayStation 4 and Xbox One when they announced the price and it was cheaper compared to the Xbox One. That did exactly the same thing. When it was PlayStation 2, was it PlayStation 2? I can't remember PlayStation 2 versus. No, it was PlayStation. Was it PlayStation 2 that came out, Paris, during the time of Sega Saturn?
No, it was PlayStation.
PlayStation, right?
Okay. Yeah, the first one. Mm-hmm.
So they announced the price it was cheaper than the Sega Saturn, and everybody started clapping and going crazy. The same exact thing with versus Xbox One. Insane.
I have a funny story on that. So Panzer Dragoon was the other game. Someone in the chat said it clicked immediately. Yep, it's Panzer Dragoon was the other game I had. Funny thing about the original PlayStation, because I was living in Japan at the time. My girlfriend at the time, like I said, I got the Sega Saturn because we were like, oh, let's get that. She wanted to get the PlayStation, and I talked her out of it. I was like, God, that's stupid. Nobody's like, PlayStation? That ain't never working. Sega, baby. Genesis, get the Sega. We got the Sega and didn't get the PlayStation at the time. And then everyone in Japan went crazy over that thing, and you couldn't find it anywhere. It's like sold out. This was early 95, early to mid 95, up in there somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Man, do you remember buying the original Xbox and like, man, I could watch movies. I could watch DVDs here too. But you had to buy the remote separately from the console. And I used to get mad because it's like, really? I can't watch a movie without this remote. I had to go and buy it. I can't even use my controller to control the DVD player. It's ridiculous, man. I was so mad when that came out for the original Xbox One. Oh my God, I forgot about that.
I just thought of something else that you just made me think of with that. So the first E3 I ever went to was 2001. And PlayStation 2 was there. And they were talking about the add-on, or maybe this was 2002 E3. Anyways, it was PlayStation 2. It was up in there, 2001, 2002. But the point is, I remember going to the Sony booth, and they were showing off the 56K modem adapter that they were going to put on the PlayStation 2. And that was going, and they were going to partner with AOL to do online.
Yes, I remember that.
It never happened. I just remember seeing that at E3, and they were demoing it, how it was going to work. That was just the most hilarious thing. And then obviously when Xbox Live being as popular as it was with the broadband connection, PlayStation, they killed that. And I remember being one of my buddies at work, and we left work around lunchtime and went to Best Buy to go buy the broadband modem for the PlayStation 2. Because it was like, it was sold out. People were like running to the store to go get it. And we made sure we were there like soon as the store opened to go get it so that we could have online gaming with the PS2. And to my memory, I swear to God, I can't remember not one game I actually played online on the PlayStation 2. I think everything was on Xbox Live.
All right. Before we wrap it up, was there a system or a product that you purchased and deep inside you were like, man, that was a waste of money?
The Nintendo Robot.
Nintendo Robot. Back in the 80s.
No, I can't say that, Pete, because that was my Ralphie's BB gun Christmas story. Because my mom got me that Nintendo Christmas 85. Rob the Robot, Gyromite, and Duck Hunt with the gun and everything. Even though Rob the Robot never freaking worked, we used to just cheat and move the things or something. Whatever.
Hey, you made it work.
Yeah, you just make it work. That is still the greatest Christmas gift I've ever got. Ever.
Like, I agree with you. I love that I got it, but it never worked. It never functioned for me, and it pissed me off to no end.
It never worked. Yeah, it never worked. But speaking on me, that I regret? See, I don't regret the GameCube. I don't regret the Nintendo 64. I don't regret the Wii. Obviously, the PlayStations and the Xboxes, I don't regret. I can't.
Virtual Boy?
I never got that. I honestly can't think of a gaming system that I look back that I bought and regretted getting. I can't think of one. Cannot think of what. Maybe the Sega Saturn.
Xbox One X.
Maybe Sega Saturn, because like I said, I left Japan and I came to the United States and I couldn't buy games for it anymore. And obviously the Saturn tanked. But Virtua Fighter, that was the joint, man. We used to play it all day. I don't know.
Xbox One X, dude. You bought it and 3 hours later you returned it.
That don't even count, in my opinion. because the games that I care about for Xbox, I play them on my PC. So it's not like I'm not playing the games. I play Gears. I play Cuphead. Things like that. So I don't even count that. I don't regret having an Xbox One. There's good games on it. It just turned out in today's modern technology, I didn't need one. And that's just kind of where I am.
Actually, you know what? One of our community members on the Twitch stream just said Ouya, and it's funny because we listened to that show that came out a week after we had all purchased it, and on the show itself, that's the BioShock Infinite with you, Paris. I actually mentioned that I had buyer's remorse for buying the Ouya a week after we had gone off the deep end, praising the Ouya on the show. So that's mm-hmm. probably one that qualifies for buyer's remorse right there.
Yeah. And we had the Ouya team on our show.
Yeah, they were promoting it,
hyping it up. Oh yeah, we're gonna have online. It's gonna be amazing. All this crazy stuff. I was like, oh man.
Speaking of Ouya, and I can't remember which E3 this was. This had to have been 2013 or 2014. Pactor's party, whatever her name was, I can't even remember now. She was there. And I remember she was like a freaking rock star at that thing. Everybody wanted to talk to her because Ouya was the new hotness thing. Yeah, everyone was loving Ouya. She's super nice. I can't even remember her name now. But
Julie Ehrman.
Yeah, that's just a memory I have, being at Pactor's party and she was there. Everybody wanted to talk to her because that was just a new thing.
Because it was a success on Kickstarter and all that.
Yeah, because that was the early days of all the Kickstarter stuff. Yep.
Yep. Well, okay. The game, the product that I regret getting was the Game Gear, because I was excited. It was in color, everything. But man, battery life on the go.
Maybe you 15 minutes or less. You know what? That's it. Because when I got out of boot camp, boot camp in the Navy, I bought the Game Gear, and I think I just erased that from my memory and forgot. But yeah, that thing was horrible. That was terrible. Yeah,
that's the one. Game. With the TV great tuner games. And everything.
Yep.
Yeah. Yep. Oh my God! Another one I just remember now. SNK had a portable handheld. I had that too. I can't remember exactly the name. And the only game that I had was like a fighting game. Oh my God!
That was the Neo Geo X, right?
Neo Geo, right? Neo Geo X? Was it that?
That was the handheld.
Yeah, I had that. And they canceled it. They go, well, it's a wrap. Because, Game Boy or whatever at that time, I think Game Boy Advance was outselling everything. So, yeah, that was the only game that I had for that system. Neo Geo Pocket. That's what it was.
Yeah, see,
Thank you.
Yeah, one of my buddies growing up had the Neo Geo. And I played it a little bit. Like, God, what was that fighting game on it? Was it the SNK versus something? I can't remember. Was on Neo Geo. I can't even remember now.
Neo Geo. Neo Geo. No, I can't remember.
No, not the pocket. The actual console. The actual Neo Geo console. I can't remember now. I can't remember.
It's been so long ago, man.
Oh, man. I have the Neo Geo Pocket. It's right here.
Speaking of.
No, let me see, Pete. Oh my God.
This thing survived the hurricane. Like, this is what got my daughter through Hurricane Irma here when we were out of power for like almost a week. I had a whole bunch of like AA batteries for this thing. And
yo, look at this.
I only have one game. I only have one game for it. I haven't
seen it so long.
Pocket Tennis, right? And so her and I would actually play this nonstop, like just go back and forth and just run through boxes of batteries just to play this thing. This thing is so much fun.
Oh my God.
Oh, I got one for you. I got a system for you. And King of Fighters is the game I was thinking of for Neo Geo. Remember the Nokia N-Gage? If anyone owned that, 100% you regretted that one. I didn't own it, but that was terrible. And I remember. Remember that show? It used to come on. I can't remember the name of the
G4.
G4. Thank you. With Tina Wood and Laura Foy, and Jeff Keighley was even on there with them at one point. But I remember them having it on that show, and it was freaking terrible. I remember that.
But if you think about it, that was the future for mobile gaming.
Yeah.
Even if I know it failed, but that was mobile gaming now, man.
Now 2018, I mean, Android phones and iPhones obviously can do everything that thing was doing. But yeah, it was just way too ahead of its time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The design was weird.
Yeah.
It was weird, man. Oh, man.
Now, I'm wondering, I know we're going to wrap it up right now in a few minutes, but I'm wondering what's going to happen with this new Atari console that they're planning to release. Because I know Atari was planning to launch a Kickstarter campaign late 2017, but they pushed it to sometime early this year. So I don't know what's going on behind the scenes, but hopefully we could have them on a show to talk about it. Because, yo, right now, I don't know anything about that system. The only thing that I know is Atari. That's it.
To me, the thing that would, and obviously we'd love to get them on and talk about this when they fully start announcing all this stuff. But the only way, in my opinion, it's going to be successful, number one, obviously, is price. But game-wise, they got to get some strong indie support on there. You know what I mean? Like, I want to see a lot of these really good indie titles end up on there at launch. And don't just pull in Android or iPhone game ports. If that's all this turns out to be, it's not going to go anywhere. If they can get some strong indie support of current big indie titles and then get a commitment from these indie developers to actually develop games on it and put them on their day and date when they come out on PC or console, I think that would be big for them. I think they could do something if they do that. And it needs to be a strong streamer as well. I want to see Netflix on it. I want to see Hulu on it. Amazon, etc., because it needs to be a box that I'm going to want to stick under my television and use beyond just gaming if you want me to spend the money on it.
And price.
That's the first thing I said. Thank you
for that. Price is very, very important. And honestly, I don't care about the apps, Paris, because look at Nintendo Switch. It didn't have no apps,
but it has games. You can't play anywhere else because let's be honest, it's not going to have games on it that I can't play somewhere else. You know, so that's what I'm saying. You need to give me all the incentive possible to want to say, you know what, I want to put this box under my television. So it has to have some strong apps on it beyond just gaming. In my opinion,
do you think a controller matters too?
100%. If only people on Twitch can see this, but if I'm controlling the game like this, then that's pointless. You know, I'm not gonna wanna waste my time with it. I'll just use a controller that's comfortable to me. Like, as an example, the NVIDIA Shield, the smartest thing they ever did was allow you to start using your Xbox One controller on it and not force you to use NVIDIA's controller, because I hate NVIDIA's controller, but I can use Xbox One controller on it. So that's why I've been doing game streams on it, because it's a familiar controller that's comfortable to me.
The Steam controller, failure or success?
Failure. Because it was going to be community driven to be able to map out a lot of the controller support for it, and it just never got wide adoption. The best compliment that I can give it is you can play Civilization with a controller. And even then, there's a learning curve to it, and you need to take some patience with it, and you need to be able to download the right configuration for it, you know, via the Steam community. But just the overall support that they were expecting for it, it just never caught on.
Oh my God, the boomerang controller for the PlayStation.
Oh, the PlayStation 3. Oh my God, I remember seeing that at E3, and we were like,
"What were they thinking?"
Yeah.
That looked really uncomfortable, man.
Very.
Oh. All right. Let's wrap it up.
I think it's hilarious. I do think it's hilarious. Hey, we ain't got nothing to talk about. And once again, we've gone like an hour 20.
Hour and a half.
Yeah. Yeah. It's all good. All right. Well, thanks everyone for sending us questions. Let us know. Was there any products that you regret buying? Any games? Let's talk about old school stuff too, man. Send us more questions for our next fan mail episode. We'll save it and we'll definitely record that in the future, man. So yeah, keep it up. Keep up sending questions, man. I love this. All right, head over to GamertagRadio.com. Listen to our podcast, past episodes, post comments, share it. Super important. Also, you can find us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and other podcast platforms. So make sure to tune in here on Twitch also, February 25th at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We're going to premiere our documentary. This is going to be live on Twitch. And also, we also plan to have it on YouTube after that. So tune in. It's going to be a totally free documentary about GTR to celebrate our 13th anniversary. And if you're close to Orlando, Florida, make sure to go over there. February 9th, we're going to have our first live podcast in front of an audience. Also, to celebrate our 13th anniversary during PodFest. For more information, go to podfest.us. That's podfest.us. All right. Anything else, guys, before we wrap it up?
We didn't get a chance to really go into the division. So I'll just simply say that after not playing it for 2 years, I'm really enjoying the division. This 1.0 update has been fantastic for it. And I'm still early on, so there's just a ton of content to do. So if you play on PC, holla at me on Uplay, Vicious696. Let's go in. Thank you, Pete. Pete and I, he ran me through a little bit of it, kind of give me a tutorial on some stuff to do. And it's funny because he's such a higher level than me. I refuse to play with him until I get to that level because I don't want to be sure, but I want to just experience it all for myself. So any of you lower level people, because I'm like, what am I right now? Level 9 or something like that. So any of you lower level people that are playing, hop in with me and we can experience the division together. And probably in the Twitch after show, I'll talk about a division more. So if you're listening to this on audio, you should check out our after show. It's in the archives on Twitch.
All right. Pete, anything else, Pete?
No, that's about it. Just a reminder to everybody, I'm still having issues with internet here. Shout out to Comcast for that. Thank you. So as a result, I will not be having a Let's Play tonight. Was hoping to do it. I was hoping to have it in place so that way we could do some more PUBG or The Division this evening. But until Comcast can get a construction crew out here to fix my fiber, it's not happening. So, yeah, that's about it.
All right, until next time, we're out. Peace.
Thanks for listening to Gamertag Radio. Be sure to like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Gamertag Radio is on radio.com.
You can now watch Gamertag Radio live on Twitch.
Get all the latest news and coverage related to the gaming industry.
Join hosts Danny Pena, Paris Lilly, and Peter Toledo.
Don't miss the crew record the podcast live Sundays, 9:30 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, or Wednesdays, 9:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Get involved with the conversation, send us questions, and be part of the show.
Gamertag Radio.
Follow us, twitch.tv/gamertagradio.